Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural, and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Thanks for coming along tonight to hear Dr. Patrick Plescott speak for us on Katyn. I'll introduce him briefly. He's a young man with a very impressive publishing record. He's a historian with degrees, with a PhD from Warsaw University and the École des Hautes in Paris. He's done work on France, the French-Polish relationship among historians. He's done work on the Secret Service in Poland during the communist period, 1945 to 1989. He's published also on, well, he's working, he's published on Western diplomats in Poland during the communist regime. He's finishing a work on the international dimensions of the Solidarity Movement, and he's done a widely acclaimed book on early Polish history, or early 20th century Polish history. Dr. Patrick Plescott is in Australia for courtesy of Dr. Sev Ostowski, who's one of our associate members of long standing. So many thanks, Sev, for letting us know about the speaker tonight. And our speaker is currently holding the position of a visiting fellow at the University of Western Sydney. And the topic for tonight, as I said, is remembering in Mexico. Many thanks.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm honored that I could be here among so many, many interesting and honorable members of the Institute and the speakers who are presenting their speeches here. So I'm really honored. Thank you for this. Thank you for having me here. Well, you have an opportunity to hear some beautiful Polish English, so be patient about my accent. Well, several weeks ago, by the end of 2012, Barack Obama administration decided to declassify some materials concerning Katyn. There were some materials concerning secret services, American intelligence, Eisenhower administration. It becomes a real big news in Poland. Media just started to talk about it. I was invited to do some interview live on TV without even looking to this material, so I was a little bit scared I have to improvise. But I'm talking about this just to show how important Katyn still is in Poland. It is still one of our points of reference concerning our national identity, constructing our national identity. I have just 25 or 30 minutes, so I won't have many time to develop all the issues I would like to. I would just to present some general views and current state of knowledge concerning Katyn. So after speaking a little bit about the very basic origins of Katyn, I would just want to point out the similarity of Nazi and Soviet plans of the extermination of the Polish elite, because it was not only Soviets, it was also Nazis. Well, it's quite obvious. Then I will try to just tell you what really happened in the spring of 1940 when this Katyn massacre, Katyn homicide, or Katyn action took place. Then I will try to show you what happened next. So what was the instrumentalization or memorialization of Katyn from the point of view of Nazi and Soviet propaganda, just to end with the Katyn memory. Well, the origins are quite evident, quite obvious. It would be no Second World War without Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact. on the 21st August 1939. And for the Polish point of view, it meant just the future parties of Poland, which was realized when the war started. So, of course, on the 1st September 1939, we got Nazi invasion toward Poland. And not more than 2 weeks later, Soviet invasion of Poland. We have no chance. We have no chance to win this war. Facing the two totalitarian regimes simultaneously attacking Polish states, it was impossible to resist. Poland was fighting for like more than 1 month. So for me, it's quite impressive because the situation was really, really difficult. Well, after signing the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact, you could find such a caricatures in Polish press. But well, a few days ago, it turned out that it is not so funny because it's a reality. So just to it's quite evident. But I just want to show you the really difficult situation of Poland. It was impossible to defend from the geopolitical point of view such territory with such many attacks of two totalitarian regime of Nazis and Soviets. So this is this. Oh, what happened? Sorry. All right. Here we got this partition of Poland demarcation line, which divided Poland into two occupation zones: the Nazi one and Soviet one. You have signatures of Stalin and Ribbentrop at the map showing the partition of Poland. So there was no more Poland. We have two occupation zones. Oh, sorry, last one. So, what was the plan of Nazi and Soviet occupants toward the Polish people? It's very interesting and important to point out that these plans were very similar. They just want to exterminate Polish elites. Why? Well, from the German points of view, it was the question of racist ideology. So, Poland, Poles should become slaves. So, and to be slave, you don't have any intelligentsia. You are not allowed to have any elites and intelligentsia. So that is why Germans started so-called AB action, which meant the execution of Polish intelligentsia in several cities and towns in the Nazi occupation zone. Several thousand of people were killed, for example, in Palmyry. From the Russian point of view, Polish elites, intelligentsia, was from the even not maybe Marxist, but Stalinist ideology, it was counter-revolution, it was counter-revolutionary, it was reactionist. They should be eliminated just in order to create a communist state, of course, a la mode de Stalin. So if we have AB action in German occupation zone, we have a cutting action in Soviet occupation zone. It means deportation and simply execution of people, extermination of people. So I'm pointing out the similarities between two occupants. They were even trying to make some discussions. They were cooperating. We know that there were some secret meeting in December 1939 in Zakopane, and Nazi and Soviet officers were just calculating, discussing, changing views how to exterminate Poles. Well, to speak about cutting massacre, we have to have a point of departure, the plans, then the action itself, and well, effects which are still, I think, actual and still quite important in Poland. What's the situation? After defeating Polish army, many of officers, well, the majority of officers who have not been killed, were detained, were imprisoned, and put into prisoner of war camps for Polish officers. We got three major, most important prisoner of war camps. First one is Kozielsk, so we got more than 4,500 prisoners of war. It's mainly officers and intelligentsia, like a few generals, colonels, etc. The second one is Starobielsk, more than 4,000 prisoners of war. Once again, some officers, members of intelligentsia, few generals. And the third one, the biggest one, and somehow the most chaotic or heterogenic, is a prisoner of war camp in Ostashkov. That's all the area of today's West Ukraine, but it was, well, the border line of Poland before the Second World War. Here, more than about 6,500 prisoners of war were imprisoned, among them also officers, but not only. We got also the officer of national police, some military police, borderline police, counterintelligence, former Polish counterintelligence officers, policemen, warders, advocates, judges, military settlers, landowners, priests. So a very mixture of different categories who were perceived by Russians as Polish elites, which should be, well, eliminated somehow. So that's the first thing, these three major prisoner of war camps. Apart from this, we have civil prisons. I'm using here the Soviet terminology. It's quite an impressive amount of prisoners. It's more than 18,500 prisoners. We got here not only civilians, but also officers, also soldiers. So these divisions are not very clear. There's some chaos in this structure. But here we got also not only these officers, but former functionaries of Police National Services, more than 5,000 so-called spies and saboteurs. Everybody could be accused of being spy or saboteur. So it's a very, very vast thing. Former landowners, members of counter-revolutionary organizations, refugees. It's a very interesting category because refugees were mainly Jews trying to escape to the West. Just imagine Jews escaping to the Nazi zone. It's difficult to imagine, but well, they thought that Nazi occupation could be better than Soviet one. That shows how bad this Soviet one was. One of the part of this of the civil prisons was prisons, special prisons ruled by Russian Soviet political police, which later became KGB. So we call it KGB prisons. There are quite there are many secrets about it. We don't know many things about these secret special prisons. The documents which are still closed, and classified. So that's the situation. This prisoner camp of prisoners, these civil prisons, these special prisons of KGB, let's say it like that. And that's the problem: what to do with all these people? It's more than 30,000 people to cope with, to do something with them. How to realize these ideological goals in order to somehow eliminate them? So that's the decision. There were negotiations, there were many ideas how to deal with it problem, and finally on the 5th March 1940 Stalin, his signature is above, decided to just eliminate them. So we got the proof. It's not our theories, it's a fact. He just signed the massive homicide of Polish, not only Polish but mainly Polish citizens, and this belonging to elites, to Polish elites. So the whole social engineering was launched in order to eliminate these people. So it's, well, the human logistic in the worst meaning of this word, I think quite similar to what Germans were doing with concentration camps. How you could eliminate these people? You have to transport them somehow from these prisoner camps or these civil prisons to the extermination points, so-called extermination points. And this action, very big logistic action, started in the beginning of April 1940. I will just try to visualize this all action to you. So here you get also the German occupation zone, this action AB, not only this Katyn massacre. So on this black crosses, that's it shows the places where Polish elites were killed by Germans. These grey dots, it's not very visible, I understand. These grey dots are these civil prisons or these KGB prisons. And we have this free prisoner of war places. It's Smolensk here, Kozielsk, and far north Ostashkov. So now you have to put these people from these camps, from these places, to the places where they will be killed. And that's the how it happened. From this KGB or civil prisons, many people were transferred to the cities of Kyiv, Kherson, Kharkov, from the other Belarusian today, from like Minsk, Vilno. And there are this action of transporting officers from this small Kozielsk, Ostashkov, and Starobielsk to the elimination zones, let's call it like this. It means Kharkov, Pyatichatsky, from Kozielsk to Katyn, Smolensk, and from Ostashkov to Kalinin, Miednoje. So Katyn is just a symbol. There are many places which are hidden behind this symbol. Katyn was firstly discovered, so that's why we call it Katyn, but we now have discovered more than 100 places when the massive tombs of Polish citizens were being hidden. So it's a really huge action. It's not only Katyn, it symbolizes the more important thing. And more, larger scale of this whole action. To make things even worse, while these officers were being killed in these places like Katyn, their families were being deported to the east. So we could observe on this very same time, the April of 1940, deportation of over 60,000 people, mainly the families of these officers, mainly to Kazakhstan. So it was really big, huge social engineering action. Well, what about effects? So now you can see that the vast majority of all these people were just being killed from this Kozielsk, Starobielsk, Ostashkov, but also from these civil prisons, etc. Now we have identified more than 21,000 dead people, and it's the minimalist number. It's certainly bigger, but we are not sure how much bigger. There are also some survivals, not many of them, mostly from the civil prisons. Some of them made quite interesting career in the Soviet structures, but we have to admit the majority of them did not collaborate with Soviets. So, well, it just happens. The war is a chaos, so not every plan could be realized in 100%. This is just a map of Katyn and the places where it was discovered. But we have a great problem now with this discovery, because who discovered Katyn? Nazis. Nazis discovered Katyn. They made very detailed exhumation. It was very well documented. It was very professional. But still, they were Nazis. So it's evident that especially the Western public opinion was very suspicious toward this discovery. Moreover, Nazis started to create really, really huge propaganda campaign in order to show that how these communists are bad, they are killing Polish officers in Katyn. So, well, it's a double tragedy somehow. Not only these people were killed, but also somehow the memory were also killed and instrumentally used firstly by the Nazis and then by the Soviets. So you got this moving pictures, documentation of Katyn massacre. As I said, it is very true, but there were Nazis who were doing it, so it was not very, very good context. So you got these massive tombs, people who were just shot by if you hear this hole in the skull. So it's a homicide. So it's evident. So Nazis were using also creating some articles in Polish collaboration press like film from here from Krakow, or some affiches, some signs to show that they are good and Russians are bad. Even in France or in the Balkans, there were this affiche of cutting massacre. But situation on the front changed once again, and it was Russians who went back the second time to this area of today's West Ukraine. So they made their own exhumation. Of course, very political correct from the Soviet point of view. They got their professionals, but it was far less professional made than the Nazi one. But they, of course, started to persuade that it was Germans, it was Nazis who killed these Polish officers. So once again, it's a double absurdity of this whole situation. They create the artificial history. They created the monuments. The commemoration was totally artificial. It could be very tricky because the communists were trying to use some play of words between Katyn and Hatyn. It's very similar. It sounds very similar. Hatyn was a small Belarusian town where Nazis actually killed some Poles and Belarusians, some people. So they're trying to confuse the Western public opinion to just changing this Hatyn to Katyn, etc. The problem was also that after implementing communist regime in Poland, this Soviet version was implemented also to Poland. So up till 1989, the official version was that Katyn massacre was done by Nazis. It was the official version of Polish People's Republic of Poland propaganda. When Americans started to make a Congress investigation to figure out what really happened in Katyn, it was ridiculized by Polish propaganda. So you got here a man dressed in Ku Klux Klan with some German connotations who is saying, "I'm a witness of Katyn," before American Congress. So it was used very instrumentally, very cynically in the logic of Cold War later. But very interestingly and importantly, some alternative vision of Katyn was being created during the communist period in Poland and abroad. Somehow people knew, the families, the parents were transmitting to the children the real knowledge of Katyn. There were some leaflets, illegal publications, samizdat things. So in some measures, communists lost their propaganda fight because people somehow knew what really happened in Katyn. It's kind of social memory which survived. Moreover, it was the migrants, number of Polish migrants who were trying to inform Western public opinion about Katyn. So they were really active in this field. They were creating many memory objects like cemeteries, memorials, etc. all over the world, especially in the United States, but also in Australia. You have several Katyn monuments, but places where this memory of Katyn is being celebrated. This mainly in the United States. So it's a huge work of Polish migrants and immigration to give a real. Name of what happened in Katyn. Well, after 1989, the situation changed, not rapidly, but it has changed. So now these places are quite well commemorated. Of course, it doesn't mean that there's no some quarrels between especially Polish, Ukrainian and Russians, but well, it's better than it was, that's for sure. You have some manifestation of art. The artists were trying to digest this Katyn trauma. Here is an example of the picture of Zdzisław Beksiński. Here is an author unknown, Mother Mary from Kozielsk. It was quite popular. It's moving because you have Mother Mary and this naked man who has just hole in his skull, like these officers. Here is just an example of the poems in Polish, so it doesn't bother very much. But it's the poem Zbigniew Herbert named The Buttons, Guziki, because somehow very often it was only the buttons who survived this from the body of these officers. Well, in 2007, Andrzej Wajda directed the film Cutting, From the historical point of view, it's quite good. It tries to detect all these contexts, all these issues. So it's a very good movie. And well, unfortunately, we have this tragic epilogue of cutting history. As you know well, on the 10th April 2010, there was a plane crash near Smolensk. Many politicians, activists were killed there, including President Lech Kaczyński. They were going to commemorate Katyn. They were going to commemorate the round 17th anniversary of Katyn. So, well, it's a tragic epilogue of this whole history, this tragedy somehow multiplying. It's really something horrible. Very interestingly, in the manifestation of goodwill, President Vladimir Putin declassified some materials after 2010, just to show his goodwill, some materials concerning Katyn. They were not very important, but still quite useful for historians. So just imagine the thing. I was starting my presentation with Obama, I'm finishing with Putin, and in the middle there is Katyn. So it's really important. It's really important issue. No, I'm totally serious. It shows that it is also reinterpreting itself. It's still the question which matters in Poland. It's still the question of developing our identity in the context of Katyn and in the context of bilateral relations with other countries, especially Russia. Well, we still don't know everything about Katyn. We are going deeper and deeper, but there are still lots of work to do, and I think we will know it better. So it may be a little optimism in this methodological optimism or this tragic history. So I'm finishing by that. Thank you very much.
Many thanks, Dr. Plescott. So we come to questions and discussion, and we've got plenty of time, so we can all be relaxed. Thanks for an important presentation. You spoke about how the memory of Katyn was preserved by the Polish in Poland and the Polish outside of Poland. It wasn't so memorized during the period of the Cold War in the West. I mean, as I recall, as a student at Melbourne University in the late 60s, early 70s, when I and my friends spoke about Katyn, there was very many people from the intelligentsia who would step forward and still say this was a Nazi-German massacre and were very keen to protect the interests of the Soviet Union. Now, when did that fade away? Did that view simply fade when the Berlin Wall went and when the communist regimes collapsed? Or were the Western intelligentsia, were they convinced by the evidence, or were they only convinced by political failure of the regime many of them supported? Let's talk down the back of the room. Yeah, mm-hmm. Just come back to where you were.
Yeah. It's a quite interesting topic. We know, thanks to these materials declassified by Obama, that Eisenhower were completely aware of what happened really in Katyn. He knew it perfectly well, but he did not want to sacrifice his alliance with Stalin to just say what happened in Katyn. So it's a very, very question of diplomacy. It's a realpolitik. So I think that the Western Americans, British, were not interested in putting this history into light. It changed a little bit after implementation or development of Cold War. As I said, in American Congress, there was official investigation analyze the situation in Katyn. It was used by Eisenhower to make some rivalry with Khrushchev or in general. But it's also the question of the realpolitik. It's a matter of Cold War context. So the truth is unfortunately not so important for politicians in this diplomatic relations with other countries and maybe in the international relations. So that's why I think maybe the Western intelligentsia was not so aware of this fact, because Well, who could say them what happened really? There were Polish migrants, but they were very active, but still it's just a minority. So there is no, I think, some political interest to put this whole history into the spotlight, maybe apart from this episode in the 50s when Eisenhower was really trying to having a hard line toward Soviet Union. So I think, well, it just happens. Katyn was not very instrumentally useful for politicians to create their policy towards in the context of Eastern and Western relations.
Before we go to the next question. But I was a student that I knew because my academic friends are anti-communist told me. So there must have been some people who knew. I was an Australian student, I knew, and I was only a late teenager. So obviously the intelligentsia didn't say much about it. That's because some of them supported the Soviet Union.
Well, yeah, it's also possible, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got plenty of time. We go here. Yep.
Could you elaborate? Just speak up a bit. Yep. Could you elaborate what happened in 1989 for the Russians to change their view on it? Mm-hmm. And also, did the Russians do anything else but admit to it?
Yep.
Is there any expression of regret or anything like that? Could you elaborate on that period?
Yes.
What happened in 1989? Have the Russians expressed regret?
It's quite important topic because it was Gorbachev who admitted that it was Russians who did Katyn in 1990. Well, it was not very clearly spoken, but he just said it. He said it. You could very easily guess what he was mentioning by making a public statement. So the situation changed really in 1989 or 1990. Then Boris Yeltsin gave us many materials concerning Katyn documentation generally. Then it was the stagnation of relations, where Vladimir Putin came to in power. He a little bit hardened his view, but never, of course, returned to the communist propaganda. But he just stopped to giving us so many documents that it was under Yeltsin's rule. But as I said, after 2010, he just is more moderate. He moderated his attitude. He gave us some interesting documents, but still we are sure that maybe not most interesting, but many really crucial documents are still in Moscow, and the negotiations, my institute is negotiating with Russian institutions how to get these documents to Poland. So there are, as I said, there are still many things we don't know. But this attitude of Russians visibly changed after 1989 with this period of stagnation during early Putin, but now we are getting maybe not each year, but every few years we are getting some important new database.
But the question about an apology.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I forgot about it. It's a problem. It's a problem with apologies. Always in diplomacy there's some problems with apologies. The problem is that Russians don't know to classify Katyn as a homicide, as a crime against the humanity. We are trying to classify it like this. So that's the point of problem. That's the problem.
As genocide.
As genocide. Yeah. So that's the matter of problem. Well, now it has softened a little bit, because when the Kaczynski brothers were in power, they were more nationalist, more rightist. They were trying to push harder. Now that the center, which is directing Poland, is maybe not pushing it so hard, but still it's a problem. There's a very big problem in the Polish-Russian relations. How to classify Katyn?
Now, before I call Stefan down the back, I neglected to point out that our speaker's current position is a senior specialist at the Institute of National Remembrance in Warsaw. Okay, Stefan at the back here.
I had three questions, but I might just ask one and then come around.
Okay.
The question I'll ask first was about the perpetrators. I think part of what the IPN does is it actually pursues, investigates crimes against the Polish nation.
Exactly.
Actually has some prosecution powers or something. Mm-hmm. Like that. The question really, of course, these are Russian or Soviet people who did this, so maybe there's no jurisdiction, but the question really is, what about the perpetrators? You know, there have been all these war crime trials against the Nazis. Mm-hmm. But who did this, and have they been held responsible? Do we know who it is, and have they been called into
Okay, let's stop there. The question's about the perpetrators.
Yeah. No, we know it very, very well. It is Stalin at his closest cooperators. So, well, we know the murderers, who is responsible for it. But, of course, there were also the KGB, let's say like that, officers who were responsible for all this, of this thing, but nothing happened to them. Many of them has already died because it's 70 years. They were now then in their 20s, 30s, or 40s. So most of them are already dead. But the rest, well, there's no prosecution. Of course, we are trying to do something, but it's there's a how to say it. We are trying just to classify it like we want. We are trying to make a historical view of all this scenario, of this cutting issue. But there is no direct personal prosecutions now towards the really really responsible people who are just killing them. From some obvious reasons that I think that 95% of them are already dead. And then there's an interesting thing, because we don't know, we know very little about these Soviet officers, but because the documents, the personal data, personal documents are still classified. So this is all in Moscow. So this is the other thing, the other factor that we have problems with getting into real people who did it.
Okay, so there's a question here. We'll come back there. Yep.
In 1945, after the war, how did they get round the ticklish problem of the Katyn massacre as against the Allied trials against the war criminals? Because I understand the Russians wanted to put those charges onto the Germans.
Yeah.
Obviously, they couldn't. So what happened? They just disappear? Or
but they could. They make their own exhumation. They just changed, I don't know how to say it, changed the documentation, and they were trying to persuade everybody that it was Germans. And it was easier because the Western allies, still allies, were more likely to believe Russians than, of course, Nazis. So it was quite easy in the first impression, because they did their own documentation, their own exhumation. They all, like Germans, they showed all these bodies. They said, yeah, they were killed in 41, because they couldn't be killed in 40 by Germans, because Germans wasn't there. Yeah, so they said that it was 41 when German invasion took place, so they killed all these police officers. Well, if you don't analyze it very deeply, it's quite convincing. And the Western allies in those days were not very willing to fight with Stalin, to say something wrong to Stalin, who was a victorious man who killed Hitler, who won the war. So it's changed a little bit in the 50s, but in the first impressions were quite good from the point of view of Russians. They could do it. Their propaganda was quite effective.
But no Germans were charged with the Katyn massacres, were they?
There were some attempts, but this issue was not developed to the prosecutor staged.
Yes. Further down, and then we'll come back to you. Yes.
Hi. It was just really a question about finding out information. My grandfather was killed in the Katyn massacres, and I think there's a great need for victims' families to find out, you know, what happened to this person.
Of course.
There's been a mystery surrounding it for 70 years.
Yeah,
exactly. I just received a letter last week from the Federal Archives in Moscow saying they have no information about him. And so I guess I just wondered, you know, does IPN help families to find out information?
Yeah. Yeah, we are trying to do this. It's one of our statutory obligations. So it's a very important work.
Just in case it wasn't picked up by the microphone here, the speaker's grandfather was murdered at Katyn, and the question is, how do you follow up from that? What happens here?
Well, that's why we're doing it, not only to broaden our historical knowledge, but to, I don't know, somehow be helpful for families, for cutting families who lost their parents or fathers, and they don't know anything about it. So we are trying. Yes, that's why we are now making big exhumations work in Powązki Cemetery. It's more about a little bit. It's about a Polish political Polish murders in the late 40s, but still we are trying to via exhumations or via interrogations, even via DNA examinations, to figure out what happened, to figure out all the names. We have identified, I think, more than 10,000 names. Now we have like this more than 21,000 people who has been identified generally. So it's we have broadened our knowledge in these 20 years. So it's a very important work, and we're trying to do it. Yes, very. Thank you for this question.
Alan,
in the later 1950s, when I was about 18, I was called up for national service in the British Air Force, and the CO at the base where I was a Pole, and he was so decent he used to give me the weekends off simply because I knew how to spell his name.
Did he encourage you to ask your questions, Eleanor?
I remained a soft spot for the Poles since then. Now then, I was appalled to be told only about a year ago that Polish armed forces were not allowed to participate in the VE Day, the march in
said but true.
Yeah.
There's a really, really.
So the fact is that Polish armed forces weren't allowed to take part in the celebrations in Britain at the end of World War II, right? Just talking to the microphone. Yeah.
Well, it's a very big problem with Polish army in the West. They were fighting for England, for example, and they were just dismissed. We have, for example, General Maciek, who was fighting with Germans, who won many important important offensives and fights, who were just bartenders somewhere in London. So that's the problem. It's a big problem, and Britain did not behave very very good towards this Polish soldiers who were fighting for them. So, that's sad but true.
So by now, this is the British Labour government, right? Because Churchill's been defeated.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So
Clemens Attlee.
We know why Attlee took the view, or the Attlee government took the view that it took?
They just noticed that the war is over, so we have to go back to normal life. We are a poor country. We have to carry for our British citizens, and so that's your problem with what you, Poles, what we will do in the future. It's your problem. It's very simple.
Yep.
I understand that they invited the boys who flew Spitfires in the Battle of Britain, and because none of the other troops were invited, or any of the other bomber command crews, the ones from who fought in the Battle of Britain didn't take part.
The suggestion is that the battle, the fighter pilot, the fighter squadron people were invited, but no one else, so that they didn't take part.
But it's just a specific case. I'm talking generally about the attitude of British government towards Polish ex-soldiers.
Okay.
But they didn't want to hurt Stalin either, did they?
No.
Now we've got to keep this order because we want to keep it on the microphone. Okay, so down the back. Yeah.
On the subject of prosecution, were not three Germans prosecuted at Nuremberg trials for Katyn massacre with the prosecution failing?
The suggestion is that three Germans were persecuted at Nuremberg and the prosecution failed.
This is what I said, that there were some attempts to judge them, but that they failed. That was what I was talking about, yeah.
So
it was minimalized,
they're
generally.
They're probably not guilty, you're saying?
Yeah, because not enough evidence.
All right. Hang on. Don't stand in front of the camera yet. Yeah. Yes.
The question I'd like to ask you is, I'm Polish Consul General here, but I'd like to ask it more as a consensus and then in my official capacity. I have a very strong feeling that after the long years of silence and the Katyn lie, in the last 20 years, the Katyn massacre, the tragedy, and all the associated subjects have had a very strong exposure in the Polish media.
That's true.
With the Wajda film and the school programs, etc. You can hear discussions about it and mentions of it in every possible way all the time in the Polish media. I have a very strong feeling, I may be wrong on that, but the young Polish people, especially the new generations growing up, will know about cutting. They will have heard about it many times. But the German crimes, which you also mentioned, the whole extermination actually carried out by the Germans, is hardly ever mentioned anymore.
And that's true.
These, execution sites like Palmyra, which you mentioned, near Warsaw or Kieśnica in the north, and also other execution sites all around the place. I think if you mention them to young people today in Poland, they wouldn't know what happened there. And
that is
okay.
True.
So
while the number of victims may actually exceed the number
okay.
of victims.
So the suggestion is that for young Poles, the crimes of the Russians at Katyn or the Soviets at Katyn are known, but the crimes of the Germans in the German zone are not known among young Polish people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that is very true. I think we have lots of work to do just to make it more equal. But I think this, the places like Palmyra are not so symbolically strong somehow as Katyn. The German crimes, we are automatically associated with Holocaust, and it's very, very natural and obvious. But here we are just entering the more specific historical issues. And Katyn, everybody knows Katyn because it's part of our identity. Maybe Palmyra should also become a better or bigger part of our history, but you didn't have a Palmyra lie. Yeah? You have Katyn lie. So I think we are still reacting, maybe overreacting, I don't know, this couple of decennies of cutting lie and misinterpreting the real events.
The question there, you have one, so yeah.
How much did the communist infiltration of the West during World War II and in the media and in higher echelons of government, I'm thinking like Philippe Burgess McLean and all the others how much did that influence, say, Churchill's attitude? How much did that influence the attitude towards Katyn? And if that had not been there, was there a way that Churchill could have answered that Stalin and confronted him in some way?
The question's about to what extent the British spies for the Soviet Union in Britain influenced British foreign policy to play down this issue, right?
Well, the problem is that Churchill lost the elections so very quickly after the war. So even if he would imagine something, he just lost his power. He was not in the government, so that's one issue. It's a very, very important but also very difficult question because this infiltration is still a very, very delicate issue, and there are still many documents which are classified from the Russian and from American or British side, not so many from the Western side, but still some of them. So I'm not able to answer you correctly how this impact was big, but I think that these spies were more concentrating themselves on all this military, technical, and atomic bomb stuff than the propaganda issues also. But it was, I think, in my opinion, I'm not sure, I don't have strong evidence, but in my opinion, propaganda issues concerning the creation of attitudes of Western politicians were secondary to more military or more directly connected to technology thing. But I'm saying it in the conditional way because I don't have strong evidence.
They're saying espionage is what they were doing, essentially. Espionage.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so where are we going? Seven, then we go. Yeah, okay.
Just to ask you, does Iban have information about Australian diplomats, Australian public servants who collaborated with the Polish authorities?
Well, frankly,
questions about Australian diplomats and others who may have collaborated with the Polish regime. Yeah.
Frankly speaking, you were not very important for Polish communists. So no, you know, if I was analyzing the situation in the 60s, for example, then you have like 400 Western diplomats with their families, and Polish counter-espionage was able to control like 30 of them simultaneously. So they have to really, really make a decision who is important, who is not. Australia was not very, very important. NATO countries, especially United States, West Germany, France, Great Britain, Israel, in some. And that's all. They have to they have to limit their efforts because they were not able to control everything. So I don't know any example of Australian diplomat being recruited by Polish counter-espionage service. For me, it's quite logic because there were not many efforts to do it. The Australians were high more rich than Poland, so the financial thing wasn't very important. And where the foreign offices were trying not to send a very communist, pro-communist diplomats to the communist country. So also the ideological possibility of recruiting some Western diplomats, Australian or Western diplomats, were limited. The only thing which was possible, the only option which was quite possible, was to find some compromising materials and to blackmail a diplomat. But it was also not so easy because this diplomat was very quickly sent off to his native country. So, shortly speaking, I don't know any Australian diplomats who would be recruited by Polish counter-espionage. I think it's quite probable that no one was.
Our diplomats were recruited by the Soviet Union in the 40s.
That's a different story. Yeah.
They're not the Polish, just to understand. Okay, so don't send up this question there. We're in the double ups here quickly. Yeah.
I'd like to just comment about this what you said about the victory parade after the war in London, and the fact that crime of cutting didn't come out to the light earlier. Well, Poland after the war, although it was part of the military part was on the right side, Poland as country was loser.
Yeah.
There was the war, and they were on the side of Stalin. So whatever West would do for Poland would be against the wishes of Stalin. So that's why, you know, they were keeping dumb about cutting. They didn't allow Poland to take part in the victory parade and many, many other things.
All right, do you want to comment on
that? Yeah. Yes and no, but because theoretically we were not the losers. We are the winners. We are in the Soviet camp. We were fighting with on the Stalin side, and we were the winners. But of course, it's a theory, and in reality, you have quite right. Yeah.
Right. So hang on. There's a question down. Don't stand up. Yeah, down there. Yeah. Don't stand up. Yeah.
Okay. I'll just speak loudly.
Yeah.
In your opinion, do you believe that in the distant future, the descendants of cutting victims will ever get any reparation for this terrible, terrible crime and massacre? And I speak as the granddaughter of one of the cutting victims, one of the first who was deported, a government official deported from Warsaw to cutting. And I know how much it's destroyed families and lives. And I'm wondering if you see anything in the future, or will it be closed?
Okay, there's another granddaughter of someone murdered a Katyn, and the question is whether the families of these victims will ever get reparation.
Well, it's very difficult to predict the future, especially for an historian. But well, I'm an optimist, so I do believe that they will get something. It's a matter of, I don't know, believeness of the faith. So we cannot think about it in a very analytic point of view. But I do believe that will be better than it is.
Well, just you get reparations, what, from Russia?
No, from Russia. Yeah. I think it's still it's not maybe not now very probable, but it's still possible. I'm an optimist.
So we go. Maybe wrong. Now we go there. Could you have asked a question? We'll go to Stefan and we'll come back here. Yeah.
After the German invasion of Russia, I believe the representatives of the Free Polish Forces had some dealings with Stalin. Can you tell me about that?
Suggestions that representatives of the Free Polish Forces had dealings with Stalin.
Well, there are many Polish officers which were still imprisoned or deported in the Soviet Union when Hitler entered the Soviet Union. It started his invasion. So Stalin, in the first reaction, wanted to create a Polish army controlled by Soviets to fight with Germans, and this kind of army was created. The majority, the large part of it, then escaped from the Soviet Union. It was Anders' army, General Anders' army, who just make a very, very big journey through the Arabic countries just to go to the Western Europe. But the other part, so-called General Berling army, fighting hand to hand with Russians, and they were ending their story in Berlin. So it's quite complicated.
Okay, so we've got the final two questions. Let's go here and then finish with Stefan. Yep, okay.
Just two quick things.
Got to be brief.
Yeah. The Brits offered citizenship to the Polish soldiers, and that could alleviate some of the feelings about the Brits. The question I have is, were any women considered to be part of the elite and murdered as part of this campaign?
Mostly not. Maybe very singular examples, but we don't know the real names. So it's for like it's 100% men, maybe possible with some exemptions, but we are not sure about it. But it's a very good question. Yeah.
Stefan.
If I could just combine my last two questions then, which is, in the Second World War, there were tens of millions of people killed. Here there's 21,000 plus of you. Part one, why is Katyn so important in the scope of so many millions of people died? Why is Katyn such an important thing in the Polish consciousness? And then the second part of the question is, a generation later, is that still the case? Or have people moved on and that's Grandpa
Jajo's
story, and now we're in the present. So that's a
two-part question. Mm-hmm. So in view of the so many millions you died in the Second World War, why is Katyn so important?
Yeah. That's a tough question. That's true. And Russians, when we are talking with Russians, they say sometimes, what are you talking about? We got like thousands of Katyns. So that's true, and from the point of view, there are at least 30 million Russians which were killed during the war, and not only by Germans, mostly by Soviets themselves. So that's the matter of point of view. For us, it was something bigger, because this Katyn story, as I have said, has its epilogue even in 2010, and it has its story during the communist period because of this Katyn lie. So it's not just the story of the singular event, but the story of somehow creation of artificial installation of communist regime in Poland, of communist propaganda, and its realization during the People's Republic of Poland period. So it's more symbolic than a real. It's still tragic, but from the mathematic point of view, if you could say it like that, it's not very big, but still it's more than 10-20,000 people. But from the symbolic point of view, it's very important. You know, you have these important things like the events which creates nations and nationality. It happened that it became one of the most important points of our national identity. I think, yes, you are right talking about this second part of your questions. It will become less and less developed by media or public opinion, but you know we are still talking about Grunwald fight, which took place in 15th century. So who never knows? Maybe your idea is not true. I'm not sure anymore. I don't know it anymore. It could be very different. Not so easy. The time heals the wounds. Not always.
Just a final brief question of people watching this program or listening to the program to this talk. If you're in Poland, you had a couple of days to spare and you want to see one of the sites of remembrance for the Katyn massacre or massacres, where would you go and what would you be looking for?
Well, this Katyn memory places are not situated in Poland, so that's the problem, because now they are these places now geographically They are in Belarus and Ukraine, mostly. So
where would you go in Belarus and Ukraine if you had a day there?
Well, these places I was talking about, so especially Katyn, but also Miednoye, Kharkov, Kozielsk, because there are some these concentration, these elimination points, and these prisoner of war camps which are being commemorated. So there are several
of them. So these sites are preserved by the Belarus and Ukrainian governments?
Well, it's also I did have no time to develop this. It's also sometimes the question of quarrels between Polish and these states, but somehow it works. It's still many things to be done, but they acknowledge that something bad happened there, and you can just commemorate it there. But of course, it's not so easy as it would be in Poland.
Okay, many thanks. Just step to the side. Thanks for a minute. As you can see from the answer to all the questions, the Institute of National Remembrance is doing a lot of very important work on a topic where there's still a lot to be found out, although a lot is known. I'll be very brief in my summary. Thanks to Dr. Sev Ostowski for bringing our speaker to us, to our attention and to our physical presence today. Thanks to Dr. Patrick Plescott for a stimulating and important address. I think.
Sorry for my English.
Your English is fine, and compared with our Polish, it's terrific. But I think you indicated very clearly a very important point right at the start of the talk, where you said essentially that the Second World War started with the Nazi-Soviet Pact, or the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, and a lot of people in the West and elsewhere don't quite fully understand that still, although we understand it better than we did, and then the Katyn massacre follows from that, and you've traced that through with a great deal of detail. It's been a privilege to have you here today on this important topic. Your talk will be on our podcast, Channel 648's here, and we'll publish your paper in the Sydney Papers online. But for tonight, many thanks for giving us a very clear explanation of what's a very complicated topic and communicating it to us so well. Many thanks.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.